Hi everyone and welcome to the FinTech Germany Award Jury Podcast enabled by Financial Times. I am Alexandra, your host today, and we will provide you with insights on the award, our jury members and latest trends in the industry. I'm recording remotely today with Maria Penanen. Happy to have you here, Maria.
Thank you, Alexandra. Very exciting to be here. Finally.
Finally, yes. Very nice to have you here today. And this is a super special episode this time because of many reasons. So all the listeners should definitely stay to the end because we will reveal some super, super exciting news. But it's a special episode first because it will be the last episode before the award nights. And before we dive a little deeper into that, I would also like to introduce you, Maria. You are not only CEO and angel investor, entrepreneur, author, and also one of the top 50 influential women in startups and VC, CEO and founder of MindClip Behavior, and also for the FinTech Germany Awards, super relevant, co-founder of the Accelerator Frankfurt. But I would like to introduce you to the audience yourself and what drives you as a jury member to be part of the award each year.
Well, I think it's an amazing opportunity to have like a view of how many startups are there interested in the German market, since we also have the, you know, the foreign entrance to the German market, and to see what's going on, you know, and since we have this opportunity to see the full range, early stage, you know, those who are, you know, already grown a bit and those who are scaling. So I think this is an amazing opportunity to see a wide range of startups, you know, who are focused in this area. That's very important for the, also for the growth of the whole European economy, but also, of course, for Germany.
How did you first came to Frankfurt or to Germany in general?
Oh la la, it's a long time ago. So I used to be an engineer. So I came to Germany with an American company called Roman Haas, later purchased by Dow Chemicals. But I came to Germany, my company moved me here. And that's how I came here. And I stayed, you know, I changed companies. But I always loved Frankfurt because it's a very international city.
Absolutely.
And I think amazing, of course, good airport. You can fly anywhere you want very quickly. So yeah, that's how I ended up here in Germany.
And it's so good to hear sometimes the people that stay in Germany that came from far away and stayed, and not only stayed, but also are trying to move the economy forwards. And in your case, it is especially the startup scene. So how did that happen? What drove you to co-founding Accelerator in Frankfurt?
Yeah, I would say that you have to be a little bit crazy to do this kind of stuff. And I'm sure we will find out some more craziness in you too later. But I think the real input was that, you know, when we lived in with my husband in Asia, and then I lured him to come to Frankfurt. I said, it's an amazing city in Europe. We should come here. And we did, you know, look at many other countries. And what we wanted to do was really to work with startups and see, you know, how we could help them going forward and how we could invest in them, since we came from Asia, from Shanghai and from Hong Kong. And when we looked at all these ecosystems, obviously we have a very close connection to Israel, and we could see there were, like, I think already at the time, 2015, there were like 200 accelerators, you know, in Israel. And there were many, many in London. There were, you know, plenty also even in Helsinki, you know, the home country where I come from. And there were some in Berlin, but there was nothing in Frankfurt. And
we thought, nothing. Okay.
Let's go to the blue ocean. So we came to Frankfurt.
Okay. That's interesting. I didn't know that, but 200 in Israel.
Yeah. We were like the first accelerator. Accelerator Frankfurt was the first accelerator. And I think that at the time, of course, like FinTech, like what we are into, it was already just starting, you know, to mean something. And many people were asking me, oh, is it like FinTech? Like, you know, since I come from Finland, is it something to do with Finland? Finland Tech? Is it? Yeah, sure. But not quite. So, yeah.
So, you're not producing the sauna.
No. I love sauna, but not in this
case.
Yeah,
me too. But the Accelerator Frankfurt is now it's nearly celebrating its 10th birthday in some months, I can see. So what is the accelerator program designed for? I mean, we have lots of maybe startups, fintechs, and other entrepreneurs listening. So how could you help them? What's your program like?
Yeah. So originally, Accelerator Franco started, like you said, focusing only on fintechs. So our first program that was launched in autumn 2016 was really only fintech focused. And then later we expanded fintech and cybersecurity. So fintech, cybersecurity, then we moved a bit more to blockchain, you know, 2017, 18. And then when COVID started, 2020, we had to move, of course, everything online, and we mm-hmm. ran a blockchain program. But at the time I started thinking and analyzing a bit the situation, we had 50 plus startups, and we had you can guess how many female founders at the time.
One,
yeah. And she was from Israel. So I thought there must be something we can do. And what could that be? And so I thought about and speaking to many people that the problem many times with women already then was that there were very few role models. You know, you had to be really, really crazy, you know, to set up a startup. And also that maybe you are not that progressed, you know, you are not that far when you want to start. So you probably need help already early on. So that was our goal, that we will start, you know, with very early stage companies. We said, since it was online anyway, that you could even have a job, you know, and you could be even a solo founder, you know, just to give you an opportunity to test your idea. And that's mm-hmm. what we did. So that time we ran a couple of female founder programs. And then, you know, luckily now then this year, first time, we actually got some support from the Hessen. So I guess they have seen our work after 7 years, that it makes sense to support us. But I think that the main goal always was for us is like, how can we help these startups to go to the market? Since mm-hmm. in the end, you have to make money. If you don't make money, you die. And so we had startups also, of course, German ones, but also from outside, even from Korea and, you know, far away countries. But the interest for them was always that since Frankfurt is the financial center of, you know, Germany, whatever Berlin or other cities want to say.
And we have the ECB.
We have the data centers and we have many things here. So, and most of the companies still have their headquarters here. So it makes sense, you know, to be in Frankfurt. So that was our focus always, to help them become investment ready and, you know, client ready. If they already didn't have clients, many times they have already clients, but then they need to understand how it is to work with big corporates. You know, mm-hmm. there's certain, like, you know yourself, different kind of requirements, you know, what kind of, how the product has to be, how confident you have to have, be, you know, that it works. And also mm-hmm. pricing. Often, strangely enough, startups have too low pricing. I mean, they are ridiculed when they go to a bank and say, my product costs 500 euros a month. They're like, oh, really? What is that? It's just like a, you know, online food delivery company or whatever. So that was really important to teach them the right mindset and to help them understand how to get into this market, what is needed. And that's what we would.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I can absolutely relate to that. In my own career at a big bank, I faced a startup that was partnering and unfortunately they had some disputes on the investors' table. And during the process in the large corporation that was making the assessment on the vendor, this assessment just took so long that in the meantime, they got financing issues. Mm. And soon into the project, I found myself in calling venture capital people from everywhere. Hey, are you interested in looking at this startup? So yeah, this was quite a lesson for me. So just because you're a sales or project manager doesn't mean that sometimes you also end up calling venture capital people. But going maybe back to that experience, how important is it, or what should startups focus on when they put their investors table together? Maybe that's also an interesting one.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I'm an engineer. So that was always, I was always very goal-oriented, A to B, get stuff done and keep the emotions away of this, all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I did an MBA and learned something more about numbers. But I would say that my life-changing education came from INSEAD when I did my leadership education. Mm-hmm. And they really understood that how important people are. Mm-hmm. They're important everywhere. And how important it is for you to understand your own behavior and the behavior of other people. And what can they contribute? What is their motivation? And like you said, it has to do with everything. And especially when you are choosing an investor to your company, you should see, does it fit? What is the motivation of this investor? I mean, in a horror, you know, example, it could be that this investor is trying to take over your company. You know, they think, oh, interesting, and they want to have a too big mm-hmm. chunk of your company, for example. Mm-hmm. Like you always say to startups, you have to be very careful. You cannot give more than 10-15% in your first round, because to be interesting still for the VC investors when they come later. Mm-hmm. And sometimes investors, especially business angels, don't understand that. And they're just trying to, you know, utilize the situation to get them as much as they can, you know, from the company. So always, you know, understand when you talk to people, if they're investors, that what is that they're contributing and why do they want to be part of your company? Of course, sometimes investors just want to give you money and they don't want you to bother them anyway. Just send them, I don't know, the report every quarter and say, you know, how you do. So always pay attention to what else can that person give you than just money, because the biggest value obviously is their network, you know, who they know, who can they introduce you to. Mm-hmm. Because the problem is for startups in the beginning is that you lack credibility. And this is, you know, when you try to get to a big corporate, nobody knows you and nobody, you know, they're like, ah, you know, like the Germans say, I don't want to be the first, you know, client. I don't want to be the guinea pig, because the guinea pigs die. So
yeah, that's true. That's absolutely true. And do you help your startups in the accelerator with all these questions, or even with the network? So is one part of the program also providing access to networks?
Exactly. So that's what we do. I would say that since it is more like this go-to-market, once they're on that stage that we feel safe, you know, to introduce them to clients, we do this pre-screening and we look at, okay, mm-hmm. what kind of clients could be good for them. And many times we attend the first meetings with the startup.
Okay.
Because it's many times also for the bigger companies, it's easier for them to give us the feedback. They're not going to tell the startup direct that, you know, I think you're a bit too early, or I think, you know, this and that doesn't really work for you. So we can be like in the in-between, you know, filtering in a way the information and also giving information for the startup, something that they don't understand. And also, naturally, we can observe them in the meeting and tell them, you know what, this is not what works with German corporates. Since sometimes we had this issue, especially, you know, Israelis are great in many ways, but sometimes they're a little bit too, you know, self-assured. Mm-hmm. And they go to a meeting and they say, "Why? Where's the CEO of Lufthansa? I came to this meeting." And, you know, don't understand that you have to build that relationship, you know, slowly, you know, one level by level. They check you out. Okay, makes sense to push you to the next level and not to be seen as an arrogant person. Mm-hmm. So I think these kind of, you know, things we can help them and understand, you know, what is the corporate culture, how to get in and provide them this information that what works and what not, and how does it look like, mm-hmm. you know, from pricing point of view and other things.
That's absolutely reasonable. And so it's in the end, it's coming all back to one thing in sales, in pitching, in raising money. So it's all about the trust and the credibility.
Yeah.
And you're helping them to gain that with projects, with the market data, with the network, etc. So yeah, it's in the end, most of the things, it's all about the trust. I have in my career not seen that many clients that you cannot win because the price is too high. Most of the time, it's really because there's not enough trust, not trust that the product might not work, but sometimes even that you as a person might leave soon, because if you like to work with people because they are reliable, then of course you don't want this person to leave at some mm-hmm. point.
And I think for what was important for me then, you know, like I said, when I did my organizational psychology studies, is to understand really the behavior. Mm-hmm. And that's what we also help the startups. So we do this kind of behavior analysis, you know, through my other company, MindClip Behavior, to make them understand that, you know, it's not enough that you think you know yourself. It's very important to ask feedback from other people and see the most important thing is not really, you know, what kind of behavior style you are, but is do other people see you the way you do? Mm-hmm. Because if they don't, then you have a problem, because, you know, their perception is real. And you can only, you know, say, okay, I don't like this perception, so I need to change my own behavior. Because this is, in a way, like exactly like you said, you go to a client and if they perceive you arrogant, and you don't understand it, that they see you arrogant, you just wonder, why can't I get to clients? But if you have this information, because it's probably not only the client who thinks you're arrogant, it's probably also people who you work with. And when they can provide you this information, then, you know, you can change your, realize, ah, okay, I need to listen more, or whatever that thing is that you can do to change your behavior.
You just mentioned it. Frankfurt is super international. And this is what I loved about the city the years I was there as well. I mean, I'm German, but I'm not from Frankfurt. And I was in Munich before that. And Frankfurt was super welcoming, international. Everyone was trying to help you no matter how long you would be in this city. So it is a really, really good network. And from what I've seen there, and you're just also the perfect example, you're also a very international person, not coming from Germany directly. With these things like being perceived arrogant or whatever, it's also a lot of cultural things, right? I mean, in different countries, we communicate differently. I see that in Switzerland as well. So the Swiss people are a little hesitant with criticism. And one of the sentences I heard here first, beware of the very subtle Swiss criticism, because you might be criticized and not even know it, because they pack it as a compliment.
Well, I come from Finland. We don't have this problem. They just don't talk.
You just don't talk. Okay. Okay. So what is the communication style in Finland? Just out of curiosity.
Yeah. I think that the Finnish style is, of course, that like I said, people don't talk much. It's a lot of silence, which for my American colleagues at the time was very hard to understand. They like try to start filling the quietness, so to say. But I think the Finns then, once they are, you know, irritated, once it's gone too far, they just say, this is not interesting. So you don't have to guess if they're interested or not. There's no this kind of, you know, guesswork involved. But so I think that is a good way. So they're quite direct once they say what they think. But it's not, compliments, you can really wait. They come not very easily.
Yeah.
But I would say that the Finns also have maybe a little bit this same phenomenon, which probably we have in Germany also, that people then talk behind the doors. They don't maybe tell you directly, but then they tell somebody else that this was not really good. And I think in that way, we in the acceleration program then can help, because then they tell that to us, and then we can, you know, distribute this information in a eatable, like I said, which is a digestible form to the startups.
And maybe one last question on the communication styles. Wasn't it then hard for you in Asia first? Because I know these ones are extremely polite as well, and sometimes even unable to form criticism in any kind. So how do you try to get real feedback from people from Asia?
Well, the thing is, you know, I had a team in Asia and it was really hard. It was really hard to also to make them do independent decisions, because they really expect you to tell everything and you to know everything as a boss. And I think that I had to educate my people, you know, to learn to be a bit more proactive. And of course, if you are, you know, in sales, you're selling raw materials, if they really don't like you, they just stop buying. So it's quite a good signal.
So the numbers don't lie ever.
Yeah, numbers don't lie. But there are other things, of course, also involved. But I think that there you have to be really, really close to someone that they are, you know, willing to give you, you know, a long-term relationship, that they're willing to give you any kind of feedback.
Okay. And is there anything currently in the accelerator going on, any programs, any deadlines, or anything that everyone should now immediately know in the podcast episode? Yeah.
So we actually, like I said, in the spring, we ran this Empowered Female Founders program that was also supported by Hessen. And now we have the second program supported by Hessen, which is the AI Founders program. Unfortunately, no women in this program. But in the previous one, we had a couple of startups also that are doing with AI. So I was very happy about that. So the demo day for them, the current program, is then 19th of December. So that's going to happen in Frankfurt. And we are working on maybe possibly continuing the female founder part of it. So I think there's going to go survey to people who participated in our events. We would love to have your feedback. Do you think, you know, it's important for Frankfurt to have its own, like, a female founder program? I would also post it on LinkedIn. So would love to hear, you know, feedback.
We put your LinkedIn in the show notes of the episode anyhow. So everyone who wants to deep dive into that can easily find the link in the show notes. Maybe one last question about the accelerator, because you just said, like, in Israel, there's about 200. And I know in other countries there are accelerators as well. And I'm in Zurich now, living here, and I see that there's lots of things going on here, especially Switzerland being a very entrepreneur-friendly country. What would you say is one of the USPs of your accelerator? What makes it stand out?
I would say that we are very unique in the fact that we actually are run by founders. So it's our program. So this is mm-hmm. like entrepreneurs, you know, helping other entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. And I think that is the biggest difference, that most of the accelerators you see is either a government or corporate owned, and people are employee. Mm-hmm. They are employees who are there, and naturally they have a totally different kind of attitude. I'm not saying that they are not good and they are not, you know, very eager to help the startups, but it's a totally different attitude when it's your own company. Mm-hmm. And I also think that since we have built, you know, our network over a very long period of time, we do know people on quite high level. Maybe that's different from the normal accelerator programs. But I always say you should join as many accelerator programs that you can, because I'm sure each of them have a little bit different kind of network. Mm-hmm. And I never feel that we compete with anyone. I think it's always a complementary thing. Mm-hmm. And that is the whole point. We should all, you know, work together and really try to help those startups to get whatever they need. Is it, you know, money, or is it, you know, clients, or, you know, knowledge, or whatever they need.
And going then back to the people and then later to the awards, how do we get more females on board of founding companies, but also of investing into companies? So in your view, what are the most critical things here to get more female spirit into the scene? Because the females are there, yeah. Right? So,
well, I'm going to be a little bit controversial, like I'm yes. probably often I am.
Please do.
But I think the big blame lies on women. I mean, you cannot make anyone become an entrepreneur. You have to want it. I mean, you have to want it yourself. Mm-hmm. And obviously then you can have like bad circumstances why it's very hard for you. But what women often lack is that they are not willing to go out there and network, for example. Mm-hmm. I mean, you cannot get to know new people if you don't go to places where you don't know anyone. And I think that's one thing. And then, you know, really openly tell about, you know, your idea, if you have ideas, and finding, and this mm-hmm. is not only women's problem, but, you know, many times women are so scared, they think, oh, I have such a stupid idea, I don't want to share it with anyone.
Or someone is going to steal the idea.
Exactly. That's bullshit.
Bullshit, no. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you hear the same idea so many times. In the end, it's all about who is able to execute this idea. And that's the hard part, because
and you don't need to be perfect, right? You just need to start.
Exactly. Mm. So networking, having to be perfect, and probably also that oftentimes you maybe cannot found it with other women, you know, that you need to be open to, you know, go to those places where the men are, you know, the male founders. And I personally don't think that they have anything against you. They're not going to, you know, try to push you out. They are just happy that there are, you know, other creative people around them. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the main thing, that you need to be there where the others are, what, you know, depending of course your skill set. There are of course women who are also CTOs who can, you know, need to find people with marketing skills or other skills. But like, so those are the things. And then openly, you know, being assertive, because that's a big problem with women, is that I think I just posted a while ago about this importance of being able to tell a story. Mm-hmm. That women often downplay anything they've done in their life. And especially, you know, they think that my experience, it has to be directly related to the thing I do, my experience. Like I have this one amazing startup that was in my female founders program. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how do you show others that you have endurance and resilience? And then I found out, you know, some, you know, ways that she had actually crossed the Atlantic on a sailing boat, you know, twice when she was 18.
You mean Priscilla?
No, Andri. She's from Finland. Okay. And, you know, and also this person, she's always telling how her co-founder is a PhD in computer science. And then we find out she also has a PhD in computer science. So, you know, it's this kind of modesty that's going to get into your way. Mm-hmm. So, and I thought, okay, understand, I don't like to brag either. I do the same mistake many times. So you have to find a way, how can you tell that you are really good at something without making it sound like you're bragging? And there are
sure.
certainly ways of doing it. You can always just say that, you know what, I was always so super interested about computer games that I wanted to find out a way, you know, to solve this problem. You don't have to say that, you know, I even did a PhD. So it's really finding a way because what is important is that you're able to do this, building this kind of confidence, like you said, and trust in other people that you are able to do what you want to do. Mm-hmm. And you can only do it by somehow establishing why are you there? Why are you the one? Like whether it's your education, whether it's, you know, the years of experience you have on this or that, or maybe you did already launch something, although it has nothing to do with this, what you're doing now.
Yeah.
But this kind of credibility that you have, endurance, resilience, that's important.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I think we have, and that's one part. Like I said, we can blame us, the women, that we are not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But the second part, of course, is the biases that men have against women. And we all have biases. I mean, if anyone did any kind of test, we know we're all biased.
I know.
So you have to be actively, you know, changing those biases in your brain. And it doesn't help that women, you know, gather among themselves and talk about how horrible life is and how it's so against women. No, you need to get the men to come there and hear how horrible it is. And they think, oh, shit, what can we do together to change this? Because you cannot change it as a woman if the decision maker is a man.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also what we have to understand, that we need to work together with men to change this attitude and really, and confront men when they do these mistakes. I hear from female founders that they are sitting in a meeting and for example, telling something, you know, a good idea comes out and it's passed. And then 3 minutes later, 5 minutes, 10 minutes later, a guy says the same idea. And, oh, cool, that's a super idea. But they don't stand up and say, hey, excuse me, but I actually said that 5, 10 minutes ago. And this is what women have to learn. You have to have a bit of balls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to play the game, you have to get out from the, not be afraid of, you know, being out there. And you can find your own way. You don't have to be, you know, but you can find a subtle way to express, you know, things that when people are trying to, you know, step on your toes or, you know, or minimize it, that's very important. And you have to just do it. Otherwise, you can only blame yourself.
And this is why it's so important that you are there on the jury, but also on the accelerator. You're as well an investor, a founder. So you're a super role model. We have, of course, some other role models in the jury as well, like Isabel and myself. Yeah, it's important that we need to tell these stories. That's absolutely right. And because I was exactly like you just said years ago, when someone, a dear friend, Simona, she really kicked my ass. She said, okay, this is not going to happen. You're not earning what you should earn because you're keeping all these kinds of things running up here. If you would leave, all these projects would be gone. What the hell are you are you not proud about here? And then I said, okay, yeah, she's right. Because I always thought, okay, if I'm doing a good job, it's going to be seen.
No,
and this is how I learned then also to tell stories, to advertise myself, but in a way that was just showing, okay, this is really what I've done without exaggerating or these kinds of things. And this is also the thing, what I have seen a lot of times with these women's networks as well. Of course, you don't meet new people when you know everyone there, right?
Yeah. So it can be comforting sometimes, but you shouldn't, you know, you can't stay in this kind of self-pity. This is how I feel. Many times these women think that's a self-pity, or then you just totally divert from the topic.
Yeah, I have, back in the days when I met Simona, I discovered, okay, damn, she's so right. If I don't do anything, nothing's going to change. So what is it that men that have the same age like me do progress so much faster? Ah, it was the networking. And then I thought, okay, yes, this was something I did not do. So I started to do that. Yeah, and I mean, the last years, it went all really well. I had so many cool projects, jobs. Of course, you don't get everything at all times. Yeah, she was my role model. So it's important to every now and then to pick someone and say, okay, I help you. I help you to grow.
Absolutely.
And what I liked as well about what you said about storytelling is, or stories to tell. I mean, if you have a product idea, that can be like stolen from you, but your unique story, no one else can tell. And this is what I liked about that sentence you said. Mm-hmm. Okay, we need to jump into the awards.
One more thing I want to mention to you, that when you said that, you know, why don't women maybe progress in their career? Yes, one is networking. And the second thing is that they don't ask for it. You know, a guy goes, I know I had people working for me, and the guy comes after, you know, 6 months and says, you know what, I want to raise. I want to get the next job because I'm so good. It's like, really? So good? After 6 months? I don't think so. But the woman, you know, like I said, they work hard and they think my work is going to be seen. And it's not the case. And all the people think, oh, it's nice to have someone who's so happy with their job that they never ask for anything. So you shouldn't fall into this pit, you know, of thinking that because people think you're happy if you don't, because they picture of someone who wants to move forward is that they ask for it.
That's maybe one side of the medal, but I mean, I have also some leadership experience and learned a lot about these personal communication styles and how people act like. Of course, you have different people on the team, but I would also make it or see it as my duty as a leader of a team to also ask the people, because some will never speak up.
Yes.
Some people might speak up if you just slightly push them into the direction of the question. Sometimes this is also an opener for personal development. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, I know you're right. The persons should also address it themselves. But I think leadership today requires also to look for these maybe blind spots and to discover those.
Yeah. I mean, a leader has a responsibility, but if you have a bad leader, it's your job to try to, you know, make them see that, hey, you haven't noticed, I'm here, I'm doing good job.
Yeah, I know. I can chat about these things on a coffee or tea sometime. Mm-hmm. But we need to go back to the awards now. So you're also on the awards jury for quite a long time. What motivates you each year for all this extensive work? Because I know from myself, it's extensive work to score, to evaluate, to look at the business models.
Well, I think in a way, since I'm a person with deadlines, so in a way, it forces you to do stuff, you know, in a certain time frame. And as I said in the beginning, I think it gives you a good overview of what's going on. And I think that's what I like, that you have to, in a way, put yourself out there and look at the things, how things are progressing. And also you can see, of course, many years we have different kind of themes and different kind of stuff that we emphasize. And you can see a bit of movement maybe here and there. But I think, and I still live in hope that there's going to be more and more female founders, which is not always the case. But I think, yeah, it gives you really a great overview, you know, to see what's going on in this fintech, you know, field.
And is there sometimes even companies that you have never seen before discover through the awards and then say, oh, well, that could be interesting for the accelerator program or for an investment from your side? So do you also see the awards as scouting platform
absolutely.
For yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's super interesting to always see, you know, what's going on. I mean, sometimes there are even, you know, startups that are, you know, have been already in program or who are applying. So I think it's really a good overview. And of course, sometimes you find these gems too late when there's no way that you can get in anymore because, you know, the ticket sizes are too big. But I think it's a great opportunity to have this kind of validation also that, and interesting, of course, to see, do you see the startup same way as the rest of the jury? So I think that's always like, you know, exciting to see that. And these discussions that we have that, you know, why should this be there? Why shouldn't that be there? And, you know, what do you know about the startup that, of course, there's a limited information that you can get from the application. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, like I said, I personally think that we should ask more information about, you know, their traction. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what have they actually accomplished? Because we all know that some people are better at storytelling than others. And in a way, we should also let the facts speak for itself.
Yes, absolutely. And this is what I also tell startups when I try to motivate them to apply, because basically you're pitching to everyone who's sitting on the jury, and it could be potential cooperation partners, because we have large corporations in there. And like this year, I don't know how Michael managed that one, but NVIDIA is a very interesting sponsor, I guess. We have some banks, we have some very, very nice other networking partners. We have the accelerator like you. So yeah, this is a unique chance each year to get visibility.
Mm. And maybe that's something we should also do better. The jury of the FinTech Germany Award, you know, to promote all these, you know, why should you apply? So maybe that's something one can also, you know, become more active part.
We can tell that to Michael then. Yeah. So, and in your view for the awards, what are the most relevant topics in your view that fintechs should solve? I mean, this year's round is over and soon is the award ceremony on the 11th of November in Frankfurt. For everyone who wants a ticket, I think it's still open to buy tickets. But for next year, what are the problems that fintechs should solve in your view?
I think there's, you know, plenty of problems to be solved. And I think, and I also think that sometimes people say, oh, isn't everything in fintech already invented? But I'm sure there are, you know, innovations that are not there. And anything I think that can help people's everyday life and, you know, decision making. Like we say many times for women, the problem is that they're, you know, the Vermögen, what is it? The women's wealth is still a problem because they don't understand to start investing early, and I think in this way, so anything that helps you to live your life, you know, in a more, you know, profitable way and understanding all the benefits that you have. And personally, since we are in Germany, I would love to have all these notarization, you know, digitalized and accounting and, you know, all these kind of things that for every entrepreneur takes a lot of time and, you know, waste resources and any kind of tool that helps you also to, you know, to be able to prognose, you know, the future or, you know, like we have a lot of tools that help you to how to find clients, how to sort which are the good clients, which are the bad clients. So I think, you know, the entrepreneurs themselves, I'm sure they will find good solutions. And like you said before, it's not the idea. There are a lot of good ideas and there are many ways of executing them. So just because somebody is in the market doesn't mean you shouldn't be there. It probably means that it is an interesting market. I should be there too, unless it's totally overcrowded. But I'm sure that I leave it to the entrepreneurs to come up with great ideas.
Yeah. I mean, there's not only one bank in the market. There's not only one computer company out there. So just as an example, when Apple started, everyone else was in the market. They were making money. They were making tons of millions of US dollars. And but still,
I come from Finland. Nokia used to be, you know, the brand.
I know that. I had one and we were playing Snake and it's so sad. They missed out on the opportunities. But this is how it works. So every now and then one of the big players also misses out on the chances. It's always an opportunity if you are a small company to gain your market share and to make the world better with a great idea. Going back to the startups and starting companies, most of them, of course, need money to some extent. So has the financing situation changed over the last couple of months? I mean, we have seen some fintech bashing in the press on the one side, and unfortunately we have seen some very cool fintechs go bankrupt as well. So yes, it is tough at the moment. Has it changed in the last couple of months again back to better times, or what would you say?
I think there is of course money in the market. That's not the question. The problem is that maybe some companies get a bit careless in how they spend their money. I mean, obviously, you have to watch for your burn rate and where do you spend the money. And you have to, if things are going bad, you need to be fast enough to, you know, cut the costs. And what I've seen with some startup is that they, of course, it's not nice, you know, to lay off people. But like many people tell me that actually, once you've done it, you realize how much less people you need to get the stuff done. So it's in a way, it's better to do it faster than slower, because it goes with many things in life that, you know, dragging on a bad decision is not going to make it, you know, better for you in the long run. And I do think that it was already said, I think since a couple of years back, that cash is king. So cash flow, you know, sowing profitably at this at some point. And I think those startups who can show, even if it's not a huge revenue, but they can show that they can find ways of making money early, even if naturally that you are still, on negative and burning more than you are producing, but that you are creative in the ways of finding, ways of making money. And I think that's the key. So good companies will always get money, but I do still think, like I'm sure we probably agree on this, that it is, of course, shocking that if we have 18% female founders, how can it be that only 2% of the money goes to them? And here, also when I've spoken with female founders, it is a lot of these biases that people have, that you are measured somehow in a different way than a man is measured. And part of it, as I say, it still is, the responsibility also of the woman to understand the rules of the game. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you go out with a very, very conservative plan to an investor, I mean, obviously they're not going to put money in you. So you have to understand that you have to be a bit risk-taking and thinking, what is in the best case scenario that my company, can become? And that should be your goal, and not like, that is maybe a goal, but you think, oh, it's a bit too much. I should just give them a very realistic, reachable goal. Mm-hmm. But that's not going to make you attractive. So you have to understand that men bullshit all the time. And the VCs know it. So anyone comes with a plan, they take 50% off and say, this is the bullshit factor. So this is the plan. And then a woman comes with a very realistic plan and they take the 50% off and they go, oh, God, not interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying you need to bullshit as a woman, but you have to believe that when all the stars are aligned correctly, this is how my company could look like. And that is the plan that you need to present.
Okay. So I hope that a lot of potential female founders today have heard this. That's interesting, because I thought maybe, okay, yes, they know that men are sometimes or a lot of times are bullshitting. So yes, they make a correction to the bullshit. But I would not have thought that they would also make the same correction then for female founders.
Not all. I think still most of them are, of course they are very enlightened male investors who understand, okay, now comes someone I can trust, that their numbers, they really know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. But, many of them don't. And then also, like I said, we talk about communication. It's very important to women to understand, how do I communicate? How am I seen? Since we know this 93% of your communication is nonverbal and your voice. So you have to, take a video film of yourself and look how you pitch and then think, okay, is this really, all I can do? Or maybe I can, improve it a bit. And of course, that's why I think many of these acceleration programs are great, because they help you with that. They help you to refine your pitch, to, think about what you're saying and how you say it. And that's an important part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's absolutely reasonable. I mean, I have been through a lot of salary rounds as well, negotiating each year. And I would say it was only in 1 or 2 years really about what I really achieved. And the other years, it was about how good I could present the case, right? Mm-hmm. Because in most of the years, the case was, it was exceeding targets, but it was not that 1 year over exceeding all the targets at one employer. It was a steady line. But in some years, I was presenting it better than in the others.
And I think people should think about it, that it's also a way for the VC to evaluate you, because you have to sell also your product for your clients. And if you are going there, I don't know, mm-hmm. So I mean, nobody's going to buy a product. So you have to think, it's like a showcase of your ability to sell your own product to your clients.
True.
And how convincing you are. And also, of course, how well do you listen to what the VC is saying? You need to also adapt your story depending on the person. Some people are more interested about your big vision. Some people want to have more, the details of your financial plan. Some people want to understand, your go-to-market, whatever. So listen to them and what kind of questions they ask. And then you can emphasize those pieces, mm-hmm. when you work. It's all about, like we say, it's not, of course, you have to have a good product and a great team and you have to know what you're doing. But a big part of it is how you tell that story.
Yeah, that's true. And the thing is, women a lot of times have the fear, okay, if I go too high in the price, then I will not get an offer at all. Mm. Let's say that the salary negotiation, right? I mean, it's all the same, no matter where you are. But I once had also that situation where they said, no, it's a little over the line. And I said, yeah, but sorry, this is my price. You don't want a salesperson who cannot negotiate their own price, right? Yeah, that's true.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And what would have been the worst outcome? You don't get a job that is not meant for you to be in the first place, maybe. So,
or a job that you hate it because you feel underpaid. So yeah, I think So I think
we could make hours and hours of sessions.
Yeah.
But I like to pass on some of the experiences as well, because some of the younger, very talented females, they are so afraid of these topics. Mm. So it's cool for them maybe to hear today. Yeah,
and
that
I think
it's
one word that if you, I'm sure everybody hears all the time, people talk about this imposter syndrome, you know, like you feel like you're a fake. And I think what is important for people and women to understand that everybody feels that way at some point in their life. Some people more often than others, but it's not like some people go, maybe if you are told a psychopath, you go through your life thinking that everything you do is perfect. Everybody gets this moment and they think, oh my God, I don't know if I can do this. And then the thing is, you just have to do it, because otherwise you don't know. And I think, you know, one quote that I really love is like, what would you do if you could not fail?
Mm-hmm.
And it tells us that the biggest obstacle for most of the stuff are ourselves. Because we start telling the stories, I know, I don't think I can do it. You know, it's a bit too much and I have to wait a bit more and I have to have the 95% qualification before I can do it. And so this is what one has to understand, that there's nothing to learn if you know already everything.
Yes.
Of course, the headhunters don't understand this, but anyway. But you should, when you do stuff, really try to aim to learn something new. And if you have a cool company, they will understand that it's more about the attitude and the mindset than having exactly the correct, you know, qualifications for the job.
Yeah, that's absolutely reasonable. And I'm so glad that you think about these things this way, because I think that will extremely help this podcast in the future to go on, because this is now the right time, the right place to announce that you will be the next podcast host. And I'm super happy to hand over the podcast that we started roughly 1 year ago for the FinTech Germany Award. I'm super happy that you're progressing in the future with the podcasts, and maybe to make it a little bit more controversial than I did it. So I'm pretty sure that you're doing super well on the task, and that we are getting a lot of very, very interesting and thrilling episodes, because you have an extremely different angle than I had, of course, with your experience as a founder, entrepreneur. So yeah, it's my pleasure today to officially hand over to you, Maria, and I hope you will have lots of fun.
I'm sure. I think I'm really, really happy to do it. And, you know, stepping into your big shoes of doing it, you know, after successful 1 year for you. And so I'm sure we are all very keen to understand, what is Alexandra going to do in the future?
Of course, I will do podcasts as well. I will do my own podcast for my own company. So Maria, I started my own company, and it was a really, really big step for me, because I always thought being employed is such a nice thing, and in the banking sphere you have good salaries, but in the end that all does not make you happy if you have ideas that you cannot follow through for your employers. I had a lot of good employers that also enabled lots of creativity and made me do some things, but in the end now it was time for me to pursue my own path as entrepreneur. Currently, I'm doing everything on my own, so it's quite a challenge.
Work-life balance is a bit.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing is, I love to work a lot. And sometimes I have like these flow states where I can progress extremely fast and do lots of things in one day. And on some days it's really taking a lot of time. Then the technical issues are with whatever is not working, or you have your Apple integration not ready with, I have not founded a company not a fintech, obviously, but still there's a lot of things to do. And I'm doing everything on my own right now. And what I am doing is the question you asked. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, and we did not talk about this before the podcast, but you gave me the perfect introduction, because you said storytelling. Mm-hmm. And we were talking a lot about sales, how to market, how to tell a story. And one of my goals in the future is that I show independent asset managers, wealth managers, or bank advisors how they can authentically position their brand, whether as an individual or as a company, through storytelling, and attract profitable clients by that. And the best part of it is you will not need any heavy advertising budgets, right? Mm-hmm. Because I'm convinced, and I have seen it, if you are able to tell a good story, and this is not like posting your food on social media, that's not what storytelling is. But it's about bringing your personal story, which always is unique, because no one else can tell your story the way you can do it. This is something combined with the sales experience, plus my digitization affinity and my business knowledge for building sales and mm-hmm. online funnels. This is something that I will do in the future. And
This, I think, is a great name, this wake up call. Yeah. Like wake up call, wake up.
Yeah, this is the props go indeed to Niels Assmann. He was a super, super nice colleague I had at Fidelity, and he was creative. And once he gave me that name and he said, Alex, this, if you're ever going to do something, but this could be something you can use. And I said, mm-hmm. yeah, okay, Niels, I come back to that. And the company is not called Wake Up Call, but mm-hmm. the Wake Up Call is like, I'm trying to help you to find your wake up call mm-hmm. to find your story and to transfer your story into sales. And this mm-hmm. can be with clients, but also with maybe a new job or with a new role or whatever. So yeah, I'm currently in launch mode. So I have mm-hmm. done lots of things right now, but I'm still testing the funnel so that mm-hmm. every email comes to the right direction in the end. And I am trying to launch, or no, I'm not trying to launch, I'm launching a webinar to get more into the details. So this will be out soon. And then I will work on the product step by step with the clients that I have, because I will not go out there, develop something that is not developed with the clients, right? Right.
So remembering this feedback loop. Yeah, exactly. That's
absolutely.
Best way.
I know a lot of feedbacks from the past now, mm-hmm. and I have also reflected these into the offering how it is now. But of course, it's going to develop over time. And of course, it's going to be more expensive over time. So everyone who wants to get early access.
Now is the time. Alexandra Beck. Get hands on her now when you still can affordably do.
Exactly. And because this is, of course, absorbing a lot of energy right now. I'm super happy to hand over the FinTech Germany Award podcast, because I need to focus on my own company right now. And this is something that I'm currently bringing to the market. And even though I have not launched yet, I have already some interest and some RSVPs. So mm-hmm. looks like my own brand.
The website coming soon.
No, the website is there, but it is a waiting list for now.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so that's it for now. But I will stay somehow in the industry, and if Michael lets me, of course, as well in the awards.
I'm sure.
But not in the podcast, which I happily hand over to you for the next session. And we see everyone on the award nights then in Frankfurt, 11th of November. Yes, it's a pretty tricky date, but I think it's going to be fun.
Yeah, it's a good date. 11-11 is easy to remember. And of course, in the future, we will hear from those startups that actually won some awards on the FinTech Germany Award. So I'm sure there will be interesting startups that we can talk to.
Absolutely.
And find out more about.
So Maria, any famous last words as jury member and first words as podcast moderator?
Yeah, I think, like I said, that you know people should understand the value of marketing and storytelling. And one way of doing it is obviously to taking part of the German FinTech Award. And using the opportunity also to come there and network with other people and getting to know the juries and getting to know the other startups and the other participants of the network. So that's what I hope to see you all there. And I think for the podcast in the future, I will certainly do it in my way. But I mean, the whole idea is that it's informative and entertaining. I would say hopefully maybe more informative than entertaining, but who knows, for those who are listening, and that we can help to promote those startups that are doing well in the industry.
Thank you so much. And then we see each other on the award nights. Thank you, Maria.
Thank you, Alexandra. It was great to talk to you.
Thank you for listening today to this episode of the FinTech Germany Award Jury Podcast enabled by Financial Times. All further information can be found in the show notes.